May I please support? My name is Kim Willoughby. My registration number is 24784, and I represent Lisa Lumbris. This case is one of first impression in Colorado, but other states address the issue of the interpretation of the holding out provision of the Uniform Parentage Act in the context of two same-sex parents. The New Mexico Supreme Court's opinion in 2012 in Chatterjee is the most recent, and that state has law that is very similar to Colorado's. In fact, it says that the most of the Uniform Parentage Act in New Mexico is exactly the same as that in Colorado, and it actually cites a lot of Colorado law in its holdings. Our position is not complicated. We contend that the trial court is in error when it dismissed Lisa Lumbris' petition for maternity because it did not correctly interpret the Uniform Parentage Act. The facts with respect to the maternity claim were pretty much undisputed. Lumbris and Havens intended to bring a child into the world together, and they intended that that child would be raised as their child. Havens became pregnant because they intended for her to become pregnant and have a baby. Lumbris supported Havens during her pregnancy, both emotionally and financially, and when she was on bed rest. When this little girl was born, these parents both held the child out as their child. This was their little girl. The child bore Lumbris' last name. When Asia was being raised, Havens and Lumbris both held this little girl out to be the child of both of them. The child called Lumbris Mama and called Havens Mom. Even when these two broke up, they held the child out as theirs, to the extent of trying to do a second parent adoption so that Lumbris would be legally adjudicated Asia's mother and her name would appear on her birth certificate. That's how both of these parents operated until November of 2011, when Havens unilaterally cut off all contact between Lumbris and Asia. Under these facts, and under our Colorado statutes, our case law, our very clear policy, Lisa Lumbris should have been not only allowed to bring a maternity action, but should have been found to be a parent under the clear language of the Uniform Parentage Act. It is our position that Troxel does not apply to this case, and the trial court erred in holding otherwise. It is our position that Reese does not apply to this case, and the trial court erred in holding otherwise. Even ELMC does not apply to this case, although the trial court did not apply it correctly in any event. What we are asking is that this court issue an opinion that follows the New Mexico Supreme Court and the California Supreme Courts in their interpretation of the applicability of the Uniform Parentage Act to same-sex parents and their children.
Ms. Willoughby, excuse me for interrupting. This has a little twist that New Mexico and California doesn't, though, and that's the Mr. Bolt and the insemination issue. So can you address that briefly? Because in your maternity petition, it does state that to find Ms. Lumbris as a parent and a mother, you would have to find Mr. Bolt is not the legal father.
What the trial court should have done and failed to do is what CLS said is the appropriate way to apply the UPA. There were two presumed parents as we walked into that courtroom. One was Mr. Bolt, because he had a genetic link, he was a presumed father. One was Lisa Lumbris, because she had held the child out as her own. What the trial court simply did is said, Bolt is a parent because he's the biological parent. And that was all the farther the trial court got. But had the trial court correctly analyzed the case, he would have said there are two presumed parents, and what I need to do is determine by a preponderance of the evidence which of these shall be deemed the legal parent based on greater considerations of logic and public policy. And we know from NAH, from SNB, from CLS, that in fact, biology does not trump. But the trial court, without any analysis, just said biology trumps. Had he gone through and done the proper weighing, what he would have done is he would have said, when I weigh this, does the preponderance of the evidence tell me that the parent of the child is the person who intended with the mother, the biological mother, to bring the child into the world? Or was it the person who intended with the mother to stand in for an artificial insemination and never do anything more? Is the legal parent the person who emotionally, financially supported the mother during her pregnancy? Or was it the person who did nothing for the pregnant mother during her pregnancy? The trial court should have said, is the parent the person that gave the child her name, including her last name? Or was the parent the person who didn't know the child's name? Is the parent the person who raised the child for the first 3 years of her life and who the child called mama? Or was it the person who never met the child?
I appreciate the litany, but on the one hand, I mean, you've got a compelling case that if the trial court was faced with an either-or decision between Mr. Bolton, Ms. Lamberis, Ms. Lamberis would win. But did the motion that was placed before the trial court specifically ask the court to make an either-or determination between Mr. Bolton and Ms. Lamberis?
I think a bunch of times, yes. We did a motion for a determination of maternity, and Mr. Bolts filed at the same time an affidavit that he was not the father. So right there, it's clearly an either or. And then when Mr. Furman submitted his motion to dismiss, the trial court granted the motion without any response from us. I filed a motion to reconsider, and I very meticulously put forth what I am saying today, which is you need to look at the various presumptions and then determine which one is the parent.
So you put the choice clearly, it's either or Mr. Bolt or Ms. Lamberis?
Yes.
Okay.
And Mr. Furman says, well, you know, Your Honor, what Lamberis is trying to do is say that there are three legal parents. That is never what we were trying to do. I was very clear in my motion to reconsider, we have no interest in saying there are three legal parents. That's not what the motion for maternity said, that wasn't what the motion to reconsider said. We want you to pick between one presumption and another presumption based upon which presumption would be more logical and more based on Colorado's public policy.
I apologize for interrupting. At that point, it was basically clear that Ms. Haynes was in this as a parent, and it was your position that the court had then to pick between your client and the man for the role of the other parent, or
yes,
the legal designation as the other parent.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, and I believe that the trial court said, I don't know that I can put two parents on a birth certificate that are the same sex. And I acknowledge that there is law in Colorado, NAH, CLS, that states that there can only be one legal father. But I would submit to this court that those cases were not addressing the situation that we have in front of us now. They weren't dealing with same-sex parents.
Pardon me again for interrupting, but isn't it fairly clear that the situation in NAS and CLS, I'm sorry, that both of those were there was again, and this is my phrase, an anchor parent whose parentage was not being disputed. And so when NAH says that, and CLS says that, isn't that a suggestion that, well, we're not going to have three parents here?
I think that's a suggestion that you're not going to have three parents. I think that's exactly right. And it is not a suggestion that you cannot, under the UPA, have two parents of the same gender. First of all, UPA does not say that on its face. Second of all, the Colorado legislature has spoken unequivocally numerous times that, in fact, there can be two same-sex parents of the Colorado children. Colorado has issued birth certificates for children on which there are two parents of the same gender for many, many, many years. Exhibit 6 to the petition for maternity, the affidavit of Mona Olivia, she works at Vital Statistics, and she says, we've been issuing these birth certificates with two moms on them since before the Second Parent Adoption Act was put into law. In fact, in March of 2002, then State Senator Musgrave sponsored a bill to prohibit the issuance of birth certificates with more than one male or one female listed as the parents, and to prohibit maternity suits asking for a second mother to be adjudicated a parent. And that was House Bill 02-1356, and that bill failed. So the Colorado legislature has known that this has been going on for many years. I've been in this area for 20 years, and I can tell you I have been getting birth certificates based on the application of the Uniform Parentage Act with two mothers on them for 15 of those years. And in 2007, the Colorado legislature made it even more clear, you can have two same-sex legal parents of children in Colorado by enacting the Second Parent Adoption Act. And then in 2013, the Colorado General Assembly made it even more clear and said, look, in enacting the Civil Union Act, they said, when these people are in a civil union, they can very clearly make use of the Uniform Parentage Act just in the same way that married people do. So now there's not just the holding out presumption of parentage that they can have, but now they can have the I was married at the time that the child was conceived or born. They get that presumption as well. So it is not the case that, as Mr. Furman suggests, that we can't put two same-sex parents on these birth certificates. And it is very consistent with our UPA cases already, CLS and SNV and NEH, that you can choose somebody who is more in the best interest of the child than the biological parent. And in this case, the trial court left this child with one legal parent. And I would suggest to you that this court can not only determine that the UPA can be applied here, but can do what the California Supreme Court did in Alyssa B and say it would be an abuse of discretion for this to be remanded back and for a trial court to say that Lisa Libris is not the second legal parent, because then you are leaving a child with only one legal parent, and that is not in her best interest. And I will reserve the rest of my time.
May it please the court. My name is Steve Furman. I represent Sabrina Havens. My registration number is 7682. Your Honors, this is not a case of a partner in a same-sex relationship wanting to be declared a legal mother of a child adopted or conceived by artificial insemination by the other partner. ALR was conceived by an act of sexual intercourse between Sabrina Havens and Mark Bolt.
Why does that matter?
Well, I think it does matter, Judge, because I have never found a case in any jurisdiction that ever held, never had a fact pattern like this that I've ever seen to begin with, and has never held that a legal father, a person who would be a presumed legal father under the UPA, can be replaced by a second legal mother. There has never been a case that has even hinted at that as a possibility.
Let's try to take it at two different levels. Let's just for a moment set aside the gender dimension of this. Suppose instead of Ms. Lamberis, there was another male who had acted as a father for the child, held the child out, etc., and then Mr. Bolt comes out of the woodwork and says, well, do the DNA test, I'm the biological father. At that point, wouldn't the court be empowered under the UPA
to decide between Mr. Bolt and the hypothetical male who had brought the child into his home?
I absolutely agree, because there are two presumed fathers. And under NAH, it is clear that the court has to decide between two presumed fathers, because you can only have, under the NAH decision, only one legal father, and that the court does not, there is no overriding presumption. Biology does not trump everything else. That is clear under the NAH decision, and the court has to make that decision based on the policy and logic set forth in the UPA, and later the UPA was amended to include specific criteria that the court should look at.
All right, let's fold the gender dimension then back in. Why is it different if you have a biological father who, forgetting about the renunciation, is entitled to a presumption, and you've got a non-biological second mother who's relying on a different presumption? Why can't the trial court use the same balancing process, even if it ends up with Mr. Bolt is out and Ms. Linderis is in?
Well, because the legislature and even the Constitution of Colorado, which was amended to include that marriage should be between a man and a woman, I think stands for the proposition that children should have a father and a mother where possible, not two mothers or two fathers. I think it is the intent under the Constitution, under the amendments to the Colorado Constitution, that children should be raised wherever possible by a mother and a father. And this child, when he was born, no matter what Mr. Bolt's intent or feelings were, this child had a legal father. Mr. Bolt was not a sperm donor in any sense of the word under the UPA. He was a biological father. This child was conceived in a traditional manner. It's no different than somebody who has a one-night stand with a woman, doesn't believe that the woman's going to get pregnant or can get pregnant, but gets pregnant. He then becomes the father, whether he intended to, whether he wanted to, whether he believed that he was going to be, he is the father. And the fact that Mr. Bolt, after this case, after the birth of this child, after the maternity petition was filed, after the case was heard, evidentiary, and after the court issued its oral opinion, the fact that Mr. Bolt relinquished has no influence and makes no difference. Mr. Bolt, at the time this case was heard and the evidence was heard, was clearly the legal father of this child. And the trial court, said specifically that its problem was it was being asked to create a new class of parent, a parent that was not a sperm donor, but somehow was going to be excluded as a father of a parent, and it believed that that was not appropriate. And I would submit to the court, the trial court was right. What the petitioner would have you do, quite frankly, is create a new class of parent, a quote-unquote, whether you use it under the UPA or you use a common law de facto parenting argument, the petitioner wants you to create a new class of parent, a quote-unquote intended parent, with all the ramifications that includes, including this court making policy considerations, weighing competing policy considerations. On one hand, you have the person who wants to be the intended parent saying, I have a bonded parental-like relationship with this child, and my relationship should be recognized, and I should be a co-parent. Not that I should have standing to seek an allocation of parental responsibilities, which nobody argues the petitioner had. The petitioner had a remedy in this case, and she brought that remedy, and she filed, in fact, first, a petition for allocation of parental responsibilities. She had standing to bring that was heard on the merits. The court decided quite properly on the evidence that it was not in this child's interest to have any parenting time between Ms. Linderis and the child, and that was based largely on the CFI report, which indicated, quite frankly, that Ms. Linderis had quite a lot of anger towards Ms. Havens, that anger would be transmitted to the child, that the child was a happy, well-adjusted child in a new family unit, which also included, by the way, at that point in time, a father figure, Mr. Ritchie, and that the child would be better off, as the CFI concurred, that Ms. Linderis have no parenting time with this child whatsoever.
Yeah, pardon me for interrupting, Mr. Furman. Is it your argument that the provision of the Colorado Constitution, to which you referred earlier, means that we have to interpret the Uniform Parentage Act to refer only to a male father and a female mother and to no other arrangement than that?
I don't think you have to. I think it shows the intent of the people of the state of Colorado,
but what they believe. But does that amendment refer to parentage?
I don't know. Not on its face. It does not. But I would point out also, judges, that even the seminal case out of Washington, which adopted a common law de facto parenting theory, the LB case, did not use the UPA to say that we are now going to use the UPA to say there can be two mothers of a child. In fact, in substance, I believe you read that opinion, LB seems to indicate that they do not use the UPA because, in fact, they say that because there is no statutory remedy for the petitioner in that case, they were going to create a common law remedy under de facto parenting. And in fact, when you read the MF opinion from the Washington Supreme Court that follows that, it's very clear that in that case they said, no, de facto parenting theory does not apply to a step-parent and is not applicable to a step-parent because there is a statutory remedy in the state of Washington for a step-parent. And bear in mind, when LF was decided, the visitation statute that was in effect in Washington had been declared unconstitutional by the U.S. Supreme Court. So there was no statutory remedy for a person in the petitioner's position in that case to seek any kind of parenting time. That is not the case in Colorado. Colorado has a provision that's been declared constitutional, 1410.123, which gives a remedy to a non-parent, gives them, if they have standing, gives them the right to seek parenting time, even equal parenting time or a majority of the parenting time. But it also, at the same time, complies with Troxel by giving the parent constitutional protections. Special weight that has to be given to the parent's decision, there have to be special circumstances, and the non-parent has to show by clear and convincing evidence that the parental decision is not in the child's best interest.
Well, your argument kind of merges, though, the UPA question with the APR question. Let's go back to the UPA. The UPA contains some language indicating that mother can mean father and father can mean mother, as the context may require. Is there any specific provision of the UPA on which you rely that would have precluded the lower court from saying Mr. Bolt is out and Ms. Lamberis is in as the second parent?
Well, I think under 19-4-105, I agree the statute says you can use father for mother or mother for father when the circumstances require. And I think, frankly, and I think this is what the SND decision was getting at, that is referring to under 19-4-105, when that section specifically says in determining conflicting presumptions of paternity. It doesn't mention maternity. But I think what the provisions 122 and 125 of the UPA, what they are getting at is the fact, for example, in the 19-4-105, even though it says paternity, it applies to maternity cases too. In other words, mothers are not precluded from asserting a presumption and having that presumption determined as to whether they should be the legal mother or somebody else should be the legal mother. But I don't think any case in Colorado stands for the proposition in any way, including SNV, that you can have two legal mothers, particularly over the objection of the birth mother. There is no opinion anywhere that says you can substitute a mother for a father that I have found in any jurisdiction in this country. All these cases, the vast majority of these cases, deal with situations where a child was adopted by one member of a same-sex couple, and the other person didn't adopt, and then they split up, and the parent who didn't adopt seeks to be declared a parent because there is no other legal father, there's no legal father in the picture. Or cases where the one pair, one person is artificially inseminated, so that, again, there is no legal father, and the other, the people break up, the same-sex couple break up, and the other mother, the other parent person, seeks to be declared a parent. But there's never been a case that I have found that has ever addressed an issue where you can substitute a mother for the legal father of this child, which is what the petitioner is asking this court to do. This court would be creating, I believe, significant law, and I think, frankly, would be having to choose between significant policy considerations. On the one hand, the desires of the non-parent to be declared a parent because she believes that they have a bond. And on the other hand, the right, the constitutional right of my client to be able to make decisions regarding her children without interference. If you say that a non-parent in this circumstance can become a parent, you have significantly affected my client's constitutional rights. Not just now or in a hearing that takes place 2 months from now in a trial court, but for the next 13 years of this child's life, because at that point, if that's upheld, Ms. Lamberis, even if this case goes back to the trial court and it is determined that she should not have any parenting time, even as an equal parent, Ms. Lamberis is still a parent. She can continually seek to have that modified, to have it changed, to argue somehow that Ms. Havens has now become improper or unfit mother, and continually or significantly and periodically bring my client into court and have to defend one petition after another to modify parenting time.
Pardon me, Mr. Furman, if I may ask another question, please. Let's take another hypothetical on top of the one that Judge Webb asked you. Let's assume for the purposes of argument that your client is the child's father, and that we have a competing woman who took the child into her home and then the birth mother. Now, I'm assuming that in that situation you have no problem there, because although the woman who gave birth may end up not being the mother, that the ultimate result would be, well, the court would decide that there's just one mother, right?
Well, that's SNV, correct, Your Honor?
Right. So you have no problem with that?
No, I don't, Your Honor.
So at the point that you're making really has to do, as far as you're concerned, with the fact of biology, though, isn't it? That for you, the important thing is that there is a biological factor here, and the biological factor is the male's role in the procreative process.
I think that's true, Your Honor, and the fact that I think again, I'm not saying that this court has to, but I do think when the people of the state of Colorado passed a constitutional amendment that says marriage is between a man and a woman, even though it does not specifically mention parentage, and I acknowledge that, there was a preference indicated by the people of the state of Colorado that wherever possible, a child should have a father and a mother. And to say you could have two mothers begs the question, why can't you have three mothers? Let me give a hypothetical to this court. The same situation as appears here, except instead of Ms. Haven simply living with Ms. Lamberis, what if she lived with two women? And that on the birth certificate, the child's name was hyphenated to include both of those women, that both of those women equally shared with Ms. Havens in the care of this child, that there was a falling out, Ms. Havens left with the child, eventually, for a number of very good reasons, by the way, in the record, cut off contact between these two other women and the child. Why can't both women come in and say, we're mothers?
Well, I think both of them could, and both of them may start with the same presumption, but under the UPA, the lower court would ultimately have to make a very difficult decision between the two so that the child does only end up with two parents?
Well, where in the UPA or under the logic, Your Honor, I would submit, you're going to say there can be two legal mothers. Where does the UPA specifically say that you can only have two parents? That's the problem. You go down a road where we do intended parenting that I think it's difficult to get around, because I think logic would dictate that this child could have three parents. And in fact, the court can say, you know what, birth mother, you're not going to be the mother at all. I'm going to choose the other two, or I'm going to choose all three. Aren't these the kinds of decisions that the legislature should make? Aren't these policy considerations competing for important interests? I don't denigrate, I don't minimize the fact that there are certainly a number of same-sex couples who raise children together, and these, you know, the other partner believes and firmly believes that she is a parent to that child, and that she has assumed a parental role in that child's life, and that parental role is important to the child, and she believes that parental role is important to the child. I don't dispute that, I don't denigrate that, but when you do that, when you say that this same-sex parent then becomes a co-equal parent, because that's the petitioner's ultimate position, right? I become a parent for all purposes. That means my constitutional rights are exactly the same as Ms. Haven's. I am a co-parent for all purposes, which, by the way, some courts in other states have said, even if we were to adopt a de facto parenting theory, that does not mean that the de facto parent then becomes an equal co-parent with the birth parent. There are cases that say even if we were to adopt that, that does not automatically follow. Now, but that's the petitioner's position, that I want to become a co-parent on an equal basis. So obviously, I don't have to deal with showing by clear and convincing evidence that Ms. Haven's decision is not in the best interest of the child. But you are being asked in that way to create a whole class of parents, which Jones versus Barlow, the Utah Supreme Court case, set forth, I think, very eloquently all the problems and all the issues that creates. If an intended parenting theory is to become standing or an issue of standing, because ultimately that's what this is, right? Ultimately, de facto parenting is a standing doctrine. It's a doctrine that gives a third party standing as a co-equal parent.
Well, let me cast the issue as one of intended parenting. Doesn't the UPA resolve that by recognizing the taking into home and holding out theory as a presumption?
Well, yeah, I mean, it does say yes. If you receive the child into your home and hold the child out as your natural child. Now, I would submit, I'm not sure what the term natural actually means. I mean, some courts have interpreted it as being your own child. There have been some courts, I believe, that have interpreted it as being a biological child. What does the term natural mean? The dictionary definition says biological. And I understand there are courts that have been said, we're not going to read that literally because we don't believe that was the intent of the UPA. But the language is pretty clear. It says natural. It doesn't say own or as a child. It says natural child. I agree there is a holding out provision. But I also believe, Your Honors, that you in some fashion or another will be creating a new class of parent. A class, no matter how you want to call it, will be an intended parent. If you're going to simply say that a second mother can come in and say, or a second person can come in and say, I received this child into my home and I held her out as my child, or, you know, my child, whether it's a man or a woman. Haven't you then created, for every step-parent, standing to become a co-parent? Isn't that what every step-parent usually does? They're held out, they receive the child into their home because they're now married, and don't they usually hold the child out a lot of times as their own and give them parental care? Aren't you creating then an issue of whether step-parents can become co-parents? Thank you. Oh, I'm not done. So, our belief, Your Honor, is that these are important societal issues, and they raise important societal questions. And we believe, just like the legislature passed a comprehensive bill to deal with civil unions, that if this is going to be done, it should be done by the legislature. I would point out,
I think your time is...
I'm sorry. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Furman suggests that we're trying to create a new class of parent. We're not. We are trying to fill in the interstices of the law and say, this is a class of parent that Colorado has already recognized not once, not twice, but three times, both by commission and omission, is a class of parent that Colorado wants to recognize and is a class of family that Colorado wants to protect. The Uniform Parentage Act does not say, find us parents of opposite sex. The Uniform Parentage Act says, find us two parents for children. Don't leave children with only one legal parent like this trial court did. We were not trying to replace Mr. Bolt. We were trying to fill in a gap that Asia had. She only had one parent when we left that courtroom, or when the court issued its order. And it was very clear from the beginning that Mr. Bolt was never going to function as a parent. We have the intended parent theory already, as Judge Wood pointed out. The Uniform Parentage Act says, if you hold a child out as your own child, you can be determined a parent of a child because that is your intent with respect to the child.
What about Mr. Furman's position or point that under your theory of the case, every step-parent could bring a UPA action?
I disagree with that wholeheartedly.
Explain why.
What happens is step-parents are called stepdad. They're called George. They're not called dad, or they're called Daddy George if there is a particularly close step-family. But the mother does not walk around like Ms. Haven did and say, let's make this baby together. Baby's already there. The mother does not walk around and say, this is his child. They say, well, this is my second husband.
Well, and I apologize if my question was poorly phrased. I didn't suggest the parent would always win, the step-parent would always win. But under your approach to holding up, wouldn't every step-parent at least have standing to bring the UPA claim on holding out theory?
Not at all. As their natural child, their child, step-parents say, this is my stepchild. They don't say, this is my kid. Now, the case of, for instance, MW that was just decided, that was a closer case. And but for the fact there had already been an adjudication of parentage, Mr. Taylor might have had more of an ability to say, I'm actually the father. But that's not the usual step-parent situation. They're not saying, this is my kid. They say, this is my step-kid. And so they're not pulling out the natural child. And you know, Mr. Furman says natural must mean biological, but Chatterjee is very good with this issue. If the legislature had meant biological child, we would just have a UPA that said, if you're the biological parent, you're the parent, period, end of discussion. You wouldn't have six factors to have one.
Well, what would be the con? I mean, usually we resolve statutory ambiguity with looking at starting with dictionary definitions. Isn't the dictionary definition of a natural parent the biological parent?
Well, as Chatterjee said, it's a bad place to look. Where you need to look is the statute itself, which does not define it as the biological parent. And in fact,
well, it doesn't define it at all.
It doesn't define it at all, but if they had meant naturally it was biological, we would not have that many factors, we'd have one. They did not mean biological. Mr. Furman says that Ms. Limbris, she had a remedy. She had an APR action. She's had ELMC. Well, ELMC was a watershed decision, brilliantly written and decided when it came down. But that was in 2004. And number one, the issue of the Uniform Parentage Act application was not before the court. So it was a different case. Number two, a lot has changed since 2004. We have had a sea change of policy in Colorado around same-sex couples and in policy nationwide and policy from the federal government with respect to the recognition of these families. In addition, ELMC has been very heavily watered down in its interpretation through the years, and ELMC is about non-parents. Non-parents are very different. they're foster parents, they're step parents, they're the uncle, they're the half sister, they're these caretaker that somebody left their child with for a long amount of time. Lisa Limbers is not a non-parent. She wasn't a non-parent according to Ms. Havens. When they were talking about having a child together, when they had the child together, even when they broke up, she was not a non-parent. Everything she said and did up until November of 2011 showed that she felt that this was not a non-parent. This was a co-equal parent. She made a parent-child relationship between Asia and Ms. Limbers. And I think we're entitled to recognize that she did a very good job of doing that. And she even saw this person as a parent. In NAH, the Supreme Court said parenthood in our complex society comprises much more than biological ties, and litigants increasingly are asking courts to address issues that involve delicate balances between traditional expectations and current realities. Asia's current reality is that she has two moms. That was her reality from the day she was born. It was her reality even when she went to see that CFI. Even mom was still calling Lisa Limbers mama. That reality is the one that the trial court should have seen and should have ruled on, and I would ask you that you make that Asia's reality. Thank you.
We appreciate the arguments of both counsel. The case stands submitted. Counsel are excused. We will issue a written opinion in due course.